Welcome to the Mystery Stone Podcast. We just fought with our equipment for the last 45 minutes because it didn't want to work. I am your MC of the evening, CJ, here with...
And finally, here I am, Michael. How you guys doing? Yeah, this microphone was like echoing forever. We're like sitting here like, man, I'm just trying to talk about Christmas.
We're trying
so hard to talk about Christmas.
Christmas is like the indulgence of children. And my child indulged himself in here and touched all the equipment, which...
Knobs. Hey, well, at least he had a merry time, because that's all that matters.
Listeners can't see us, but there's like 40 knobs here.
Yeah, like all it takes is one, right?
I had to figure out which was the one he played with.
One knob and a curious child.
And it didn't go well.
Nope. But here we are.
Yeah.
Talking about Christmas.
That's what I get for letting a toddler in the room.
Yeah, but me personally, man, I don't know. Christmas has always been a time of the year of like most joy for me, honestly. I know for a lot of people, their favorite holiday that I speak to is like Halloween, something like that, dress up, things along those lines. But for me, I think it's because when I was a kid, Christmas was like the time of the year where my family actually was kind of family-ish. And for those of you guys who don't know, my past in terms of my family has been pretty tumultuous, a lot of schisms, a lot of separations, a lot of distance. I haven't really had the biggest family of all time growing up. It's always been like a really small part of my life. But during Christmas time, it was always like the jolliest, I don't know, most just upbeat time of the year. And I was also raised Catholic growing up, so I was also raised with the delusion when I was a kid that Santa Claus was real, and then if you're a good kid, you get you get gifts, which I was always a good kid. You're raised Catholic school, et cetera, et cetera. And I was always good at heart. It was always a time of the year where it was just like exciting, so exciting. And I swear the one time when I was like, I forget how old, maybe like 8 years old or so, it was like Christmas Eve night, and all excited, all crazy. And I couldn't completely fall asleep. And I heard this like slam on the rooftop above me. And like, I could have sworn, I was like, dude, Santa Claus is here, man. Santa Claus is here with the reindeers. And I was like trying to force myself to bed. And I forget exactly what happened, but it was a very exciting time. And I believe that time that Santa Claus was there. And I don't know, it was just for me personally, it was a very, very magical, just really, really happy, upbeat part of the year. And like everywhere you go, there's like all these little Christmas characters all blown up and colorful, and there's lights all over the place. So I don't know. It's just awesome. So I'm kind of excited to kind of dig into the origins. How was Christmas for you growing up? Was
awful.
Anything of importance?
No.
No, was it?
No.
So we have different origins and upbringings in terms of how we portray this holiday, I guess, right?
Yeah.
It was horrible. I don't even know if that's serious.
My mom put like a pretty good foot forward to try to make it decent for us.
Mm-hmm.
But there was just no saving that. Like, people always ended up fighting, and we would spend Christmas a lot of times with this super pompous and pretentious side of the family that, as a little kid, you don't quite understand it. And then you look at those memories later on as an adult, and you were like, y'all were just not cool people. Like,
so would you have like gatherings, like a full lot of people, and there was like these schisms between the superior and inferior, whatever vibes you were saying, or was it kind of like a small gathering?
Was that maybe in a way? It was never really like a small gathering, but
yeah.
The reality is, I don't like Christmas. I haven't liked Christmas in many, many years.
Wow, dude. So we're on the opposite spectrums of this.
Yeah, no, I can't stand Christmas. Christmas is a miserable time. Then
got a Grinch in the corner of your guys, man.
There were a couple of times where things were set up for me, and people made a big deal out of for when you're a kid, the receiving those Christmas gifts, it's like, that's a big deal for you, right?
Yeah, it's huge.
And,
yeah.
And then, especially when you're very much so under the impression you're getting something that you really, really, really want, and then people will hype you up for it, and they're like, yeah, and they're like, it's really, and then things happen, and you don't receive it, or something like that. And I had a lot of those disappointments as a child.
Damn.
Expecting certain things, and getting hyped up for it, like being told that it's going to happen for me, and it just doesn't.
Would your parents say that you're getting like this certain, like maybe object of desire or something that you're wanting? Like how, what made you think that you're going to get it?
Just
normal, like what we're taught, what we're told, you know, Santa Claus is, or is there like insinuations from relatives or something?
I'm not going to name names, but
yeah,
there was a specific traumatic incident when I was younger where I was, for like 2 years, I was begging for a video camera because I've always been into like the whole multimedia, like making videos and doing audio. And
yeah,
it's been a big part of my life since I was a little kid. Like middle school, we started making videos.
Yeah,
like,
I didn't know you were into that stuff for so long.
Oh, yeah, a long time.
Jeez.
And I really wanted a video camera of my own. And I was in this multimedia class in high school, and they had this nice camera set up. And I received a phone call during math class the one day, and my teacher was like, oh, it's not normal for this person to call you, go answer it. And these people were at Best Buy, and they're like, oh, yeah, we're looking at the camera, blah, blah, blah. Is this what you're looking for? This feature, that feature. And now I'm hype. I'm like, fuck, they're buying my camera. Ooh. I'm like, they're buying my camera. Like, yeah. This is awesome. They're getting the camera. They're getting the camera. And then my little brother opened it up on Christmas morning.
Damn.
Yeah, I was pissed. I will never, ever forget that.
So your brother opened it like on accident?
No. It was not even close to an accident. They were like, we want you guys to share.
Oh, so that wasn't even like meant for you.
He used it like twice.
Oh,
I was so tight, dude. I was putting out videos on YouTube and stuff like all the time. Me and my friends were doing stupid music videos and whatever. And we were using this like photographic camera that had video function to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I really wanted this particular camera. And yeah.
Were you raised believing Santa Claus was real?
Yes. Yeah.
And you weren't necessarily raised Catholic or anything, right?
Evangelical Lutheran.
Oh, okay. So you were, or you know, something along those lines. Sorry. So you did have like the whole fantasy of Santa Claus being real, which you know maybe is real. But anyways, who freaking knows at this point?
It's not real when it comes to poor kids' houses.
Yeah, that's true. You gotta stop being bad.
Yeah, no. I just that was that story. That was the most traumatic Christmas experience for me as a kid. I was an older kid though, and I was angry, and I got over it, and like I got past it. That would have crushed me if I had been like 10 years old.
Yeah,
that would have crushed me
for sure.
I will never ever forget that happened. But I'm past it, and it's just like I just don't like Christmas. Christmas sucked. I had my dad 1 year did not get us a single thing, and told us it's because we were bad kids.
Jeez. Yeah, I guess that's one thing I'm really lucky growing up. Maybe why it was such a good taste in my mouth in terms of pastimes, because I know my parents always got me a decent amount of things for Christmas. I was never like spoiled, but definitely would get a lot of things that I would want. And even like the night before or like the morning of Christmas, they would like leave out on like the main table in the main room where like the tree was that we had, like the real tree, you know, all decorated. And the decorations, the inside of the house, outside, you know, all the gifts and stuff like that. Like, on the morning, on the main table, like I was saying, they left, you know, come to find out, like, it was a note that my mom wrote, acting like it was from Santa Claus. And, like, it was, like, a note to me, specifically from Santa Claus. It was, like, written in different handwriting and things, and like, different style. The night before, we would like leave out cookies for the reindeer, and so we had like the cookies like left out on the table for overnight on Christmas Eve, and it was always like exciting, like, oh man, oh here we go, you know, like they're gonna come here and have the, it's just, it was a really magical, weird, interesting time. It plays on the imagination, and like waking up and having those the cookie crumbs being specifically left on the plate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just like seeing like, oh man, the reindeer came, like, my gifts are here. And just like those like first, like the first minute or so, like walking down the stairs like real slow into the main room, like and that morning, like all excited, and then like peeking around the corner and seeing all the gifts laying there and the crumbs on the table and everything. It was just extremely magical and a really, really, really happy time. And then there's like the anticipation of opening up the gifts. But like you're saying, it's there is definitely a matter of luck, serendipity, or whatever you want to call it, in terms of like how one perceives Christmas and how, you know, happy the attributions are. And I know not a lot of people are as fortunate as I personally have been in terms of dealing with the holiday, and there's people who are more fortunate than me, but it is unfortunate for those who weren't able to like participate or who felt something negative because like other kids that they knew were getting all these cool things and they didn't get anything, or it could be really detrimental for a kid, you know, like as that happened to you. So it's a mixed bag, but yeah, you know, here we are.
My mom tried.
Yeah.
But you know, she's human too, and she made mistakes. And
yeah.
I didn't have a good childhood.
Yeah, I hear that. You know, it was multiple areas, but
being removed from one dangerous situation after another, here and there, and just I've moved, like to this day, I've moved over 18 times.
18 times, dude.
18 times.
Damn. So you're probably really used to change.
Yeah. I can list every single place I've ever lived, starting with the first place I remember was in a town called Hellertown, and that we lived somewhere previous to that, but I was far too young to remember. But I remember Hellertown and every single place I've lived since then.
Wow.
Yeah, I've moved over 18 times. So
yeah, besides a certain girlfriend or whatever, like that you had in the past, no longer, of course. I was at my parents' house all my life. Like they never moved ever since I was born. I was typically always on one spot. Never got used to moving, never moved, you know, in terms of like family moving. So yeah, it's interesting when you hear from people who have been through movings or moved to school or state to state, or I don't know, it's like, damn man, I never did that. I never got used to that.
Yeah, there were times we just moved and went down the street. I'm so serious.
That must be so weird.
It really is. But
yeah.
And it creates a sense of instability and unassurance, and there is a depression that comes from that you don't really recognize as a depression at first because it feels normal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you live somewhere for a year to 6 months. I think as a kid, I think the longest we ever lived in one place was like 3 years.
Wow. Yeah, so I'm sure it created a lot of like
we lived in a
subconscious
like this like cul-de-sac scenario, and literally lived in four different houses in the same cul-de-sac.
Wow. So, well, at least I got to see the whole at least you got to see the cul-de-sac from different perspectives. You know,
it was miserable, man.
Yeah. There's not only like one side to the cul-de-sac.
Yeah, it's like real nomadic like lifestyles, like strange and just Christmas. I don't have. I have fond memories of Christmas. I do possess fond memories of Christmas.
Yeah.
But
they're just sunk underneath the ocean of just
it's
negativity.
It's just far shorter list than everything I distaste about Christmas. Like,
yeah. Well, I guess that's our experience with Christmas. we have one that doesn't really have the best, and one that really, really, really does like it. But beside all that, this whole episode is going to be about the origins of Christmas, as the title states. And yeah, I don't know. This one to me seemed a little bit more in terms of like the details seemed a little bit more loosely tied, as opposed to the descending of the holiday of Thanksgiving. You know, like the origins of Thanksgiving seem a little more structured. Could be wrong on that. But, you know, Christmas seems a little bit, you know, a little bit loosely tied into how it became what it is today in terms of, like, the origins, in terms of, like, kind of, like, where a lot of the themes and the ideas came from, or even the time of the year that it was assigned to. And how we know it today, I don't know, the series of events that led up to what we know it as today. It's just, I don't know, it doesn't really seem to be follow the most direct, like, lineage or, like, string of information or trends. I mean, to some degree it does, but it seems like there's a little bit more holes. But I don't know, maybe I'm just missing some of the information. But, you know, we'll dig into it here, and I don't know. We'll see what's up with Christmas. So, yeah, the origins of Christmas. Where is the earliest part of Christmas that you know of?
Norse mythology. And it's not Christmas in there.
No, right?
No.
It was a good old Yule.
Yeah.
They call it Yuletide.
Yeah,
I guess, whatever you call it.
Yeah, because as far as I know, Norse is the earliest that I know of. But yeah, they did like a Yule celebration, but it wasn't spelled like you would see Yule today, like the Yule. It was J-U-L.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yule.
It was probably pronounced Yule.
Yeah. I forget what the actual word Yule means, what it stands for. But
No, but it's a celebration that lasts far more than one day. It starts on the winter solstice, which is typically December 21st.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the shortest day of the year, and that's we get a lot of our modern day Christmas traditions from this particular practice. Like, they would drag an evergreen tree into the house because it symbolized living through the harshest time of year. Because, you know, an evergreen tree, it stays green throughout the wintertime. And they would hang, you know, the tree and then boughs of it just because, and wreaths, just because it just had that symbology of lasting. And then they would do a great feast because that they would also, they would cull a lot of their herds because it's you can't feed all those animals throughout the winter. So they would keep their breeding, what they were going to use to breed, and then we slaughtered the rest, and then there would be this, like, surplus of meat, and they would have this big feast. And there would be a practice called wassailing, which is just an overindulgence of alcohol.
Of course. I mean, always have to have alcohol included.
Yeah. Then there was this practice of putting apples in trees. Was that the Norse? No, that was not the Norse. That was later on.
I think that came a lot later on.
That was a lot later. That was we'll get to that.
Yeah.
If I need some notes. And they viewed it as like a time of like sacrifice, and they would stay inside. There were demons and shit outside that they didn't want to interact with, and it was just not a great a thing to be caught up in. So it was all about preserving life and this. It's almost like a ritual in a way if you think about it, because they were doing all these different things that would bring a survival through the winter, and then a bountiful planting season, you know, in early spring.
Yeah,
they would give gifts. The idea of gift giving, it was I forget exactly what it meant, but it was basically to bring spirits up.
Mm.
Right, this is a great time of partying and whatnot. So, like, the concept of Yule, it starts on the winter solstice and it goes for like almost 2 weeks, something like that.
I think it goes until January 1st.
Yeah,
or so at least until January. So it's interesting how like the earliest, at least that we know of, the roots of Christmas come from like early Europeans, and it's all like in celebration of the winter solstice. And the winter solstice essentially is either the day of the winter solstice or the day before the winter solstice is like the day where it's like the shortest day of the year.
It's the day of.
The day of it?
The day of the solstice. It's the shortest day.
Yeah, okay. So then from there on out, the days get longer. And so like the Norse were very, you know, interested in celebrating that sun coming back and kind of waxing, you know, its way back into the earth in terms of a longer time. That log, yeah, there's this practice, like you were saying, that they have with they would try to get the biggest log that they could find and, you know, burn it. And apparently, like, every spark, every flame, like, every part of that log that would burn, and this log would burn for days, sometimes, like, maybe even, like, a week or more, would symbolize, like, prosperity of the animals, like animals to that they would have for the year, following year.
It was symbolized like each like a chicken gonna hatch or a calf being born, every single spark.
So that's interesting. And the celebration was from December 21st through January. So we can see how you know, we're gonna start to see the correlations here between like Christ, December 21st, you know, Christ, the winter solstice, the coming back of the sun, you know, Christ being the sun god. Mm-hmm. We're going to start to see like little parallels and correlations between these facts as we go down them. And,
there was a lot of stuff that the old Norse used to do that we still do today. But if like you mentioned the Yule log, but they had a lot of the sacred plants. They had the evergreen wreaths, trees, holly, ivy. We still all use that. Candles and lights. And then there's the fruitcake. That's a traditional dessert from them. Uh-huh. They would focus on the well-being of all humanity at this time of the year. There was also it's possible to root Santa Claus with the goddess Holda. There's something I came across an online thing called When Santa Was a Woman. I came across that while doing research for this. I guess
Santa Claus had a change of heart too, huh?
This story is it's his woman goddess Hulda, and she's basically Santa Claus.
That's interesting. Yeah, I always thought the earliest was due to Saint Nicholas.
Well, that's what we get told, and that's the common thing. But this is the earliest potential tracing that I was able to find.
Interesting.
Yeah. So like you have all this different stuff going on with these. Decorating, we use these decorations to this day. You get mistletoe put up, and there was one other thing. When it came to mistletoe, was there was druids. They would slaughter a white bull and gather mistletoe.
Okay.
At this time of the year,
it's also interesting to note that even in previous times before the Christmas that we know of today, the mistletoe was initially stood for like was a symbol for fertility. Which, I guess kind of makes sense because, kissing under a mistletoe, blah, 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 but there's always some type of, like, primitive or animalistic seemingly origin to a lot of things that we hold dear today in terms of just sexuality or, just the energy that makes up the world.
That's one of the reasons the children were so, when you give gifts to children on Christmas, it's a slightly diluted form. Like, children were celebrated this time because they too were a symbol of fertility.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily. They weren't people. They were not
the result of fertility.
The result of fertility. They were not doing
the fruit of fertility.
They were not doing things to these children. So don't worry about that. But they were.
Well, at least hopefully not.
I guess that's a topic for another.
Yeah, it's another time.
But they would view these children as like a symbol of successful fertility, and they were something to be celebrated this time of year as well. Mm-hmm. My notes just fell down.
Well, there we go. Podcast over. Stay tuned till next week. So also this the same time in Germany, Odin was worshipped and revered during these times as well. So Odin was kind of important during these times, and it's like it seems like a lot of cultures like just needed something around this time to cope with the coldness and like the desolateness of winter time and everything dying, and it just being a time of reflection and the coming year, the coming things that are gonna be arriving.
Yeah, Odin used to fly across the sky and do like judgments of good and bad, and we still see that a part of that story, with Santa's sleigh.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know, it's just weird how everything evolves. And then at the same time in Rome, they dealt with Saturnalia, which is like a lot of people have heard of Saturnalia in terms of like the origins of Christmas. And I guess during this time, they worshipped or they revered like Saturn. They honored Saturn, which was the god of agriculture at the time. And it's just interestingly enough, during this time, during Saturnalia, I guess like slaves and masters would like switch roles, and it'd be like this weird, like psychological shift in terms of society, at least in certain areas, during this time. And, of course it'd be like a lot of feasting, like every other tradition, holiday and things along those lines. And also during the Saturnalia, they also had Juvenalia. So Juvenalia honored the children of Rome. So you had the Saturnalia, which was like, the general overview and, the parents and, or the adults and doing their feasting and their partying and this and that. And then we got a little something for the kids.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting. But yeah. And also in Rome, during this whole thing, the upper class celebrated the birth of Mithra, which was the god of the unconquerable sun. And his birthday was known to be on December 25th. Mithra, and anyone studying Mithra or going into the parallels between Mithra and Jesus, I think there might even be hundreds of parallels. I read some number in the past. I mean, it could be wrong, but there's a lot of parallels between the figure of Jesus and Mithra.
There was when I was researching all this, I watched a documentary that's available on YouTube, and an individual on there, a research, I forget his name.
Mm-hmm.
He actually commented on that directly, and he said that when these stories were being created at the time, it was, with Mithra, it was the birth of the sun, and he says directly that refers to the sun, S-U-N, and then when they adopted that into the birth of Christ, it was the birth of the sun, but S-O-N. Mm-hmm. It was like a really interesting comparison. They just took like, what is the celebration? The birth of the sun. They're like, we're going to take that sentence. We're using it.
Yeah, see, that's interesting, like, correlation with the Bible. If it does hold any type of substance, is like Jesus being like the sun and like the 12 apostles or disciples being like the 12 symbols of the zodiac and how they all play about. And, you know, that's another deal. But,
Jesus was definitely not born in December, too. Like, if you go and you look at the stories, like the shepherds watching over their sheep at night, mm-hmm. they were not doing that in the winter.
No, I think his name, what was his name? His name was Sextus Julius Africanus. He first surmised that Jesus's birth was like March 25th, which would make, the conception to be March 25th, which would make his birthday December 25th. But this was something that happened later on, that this guy first declared Jesus's birthday to be December 25th. Yeah, aside from that, a lot of the scholars, like a lot of people who are like actually looking to the, like when Jesus' birth actually would have been, they're saying that it must most likely be in the spring. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's definitely a big jump between spring and the end of the year.
Like, I mean, the Bible backs that up.
Yeah, it does.
So like
it does.
How they say like these people traveling to come see Jesus.
Yeah.
I guess like the three kings would have taken like an extra 2 weeks to get there after he was born to actually see him.
Yeah, and there's also some parallels between Mithra and the Jesus story. I guess when Mithra was born, he was born from a rock,
mm-hmm.
and then I guess shepherds traveled and came to worship his birth, and so I guess it's kind of like parallel to like the Magi, the three Magi that came and visited Jesus at his birth when they had the knowledge of it, and it's just interesting that's such a prominent Christian parallel. Dating back to Mithra, and just how many parallels there are, and how Jesus' attribution falls on the actual date of Mithra's birth.
Well, it's crazy. It's because at the time period, like when Christmas was being, conceptualized.
Conceptualized.
The main Christian religion was the resurrection day, so mm-hmm. Easter. Which we'll do an episode on that too.
Yeah.
Because there's a pagan
whenever
goddess
it comes,
named
Ishtar.
Easter. Yeah. It's even pronounced Easter from what I saw.
I think it's Ishtar. Like Ishtar. Maybe it's pronounced Easter.
The one that I'm talking about is Oester.
Oh, I've never seen that one.
Yeah. It's pronounced Easter. She's like the goddess, and like they symbolize her using like rabbits and stuff. But whatever.
Okay. Yeah.
But anyway, so their main holiday was the resurrection.
Mm-hmm.
They decided that they wanted to celebrate the birth, and they had these conversations like, how are we going to celebrate the birth? And then we have this festival of the winter solstice, and Yule, and it has several different names over various cultures, and not all cultures celebrate it in the exact same way, but there's a lot of similarities in between, and it was like an honoring of the spirits and to bring good fortune for the planting season, the spring to come, and to make it through the winter, because surviving the winter isn't exactly like easy when you don't have the comforts of like electricity.
Yeah, I can only imagine what it was like back then.
Combustion engines that heat your house and stuff. You know, when
gas stations down the street, convenience stores, houses.
Home construction not a solid practice. In insulation,
no Home Depots around them.
Fiberglass did not exist. So
yeah,
you know, this was something that really really mattered to them, and they would celebrate this like in the streets and whatnot. So like the church came through and they were like, well, we want to celebrate the birth. When are we going to do this? Like, why don't we do this here? Like. And that's really like what they did. They just picked it, and they were just like, "Well, they're doing this on the 25th. Why don't we do that on the 25th too? And then we'll just like take some of these stories and
So the church at the time realized that they couldn't outlaw the pagan holidays. You know, the people wanted it; it was there to stay. They were still prominent, and at the same time, Christianity was on its rise. So, like the church did with many other things, they assimilated and absorbed a lot of the customs and traditions, and just kind of reinvented their meaning and purpose for culture from there on out, and just ended up blending a lot of the pagan roots into the Christmas that we know today. And that whole thing with Easter was the main focus in terms of Jesus back then, but then, like you're saying, they made it a holiday, or that they made it a thing to discover Jesus' birthday and start revering that in the 4th century. It wasn't until the 4th century that his birthday really became a real deal.
Yeah. And then they did the thing that's what we were talking kind of got brought up earlier, a little mixed up, but that's at the time where they started bringing the evergreen trees, and then they put the apples in the tree to symbolize the apple from the Garden of Eden.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah.
And eventually, obviously, putting apples in your tree, you know, like that's food in a time period where you probably should have been eating that instead, not letting it go bad in your tree.
Yeah. Well, at least they could like just wake up and just pick it off the tree and keep moving.
Yeah. But eventually they stopped using apples, and that's where we get our ball ornaments from. They use ball ornaments, glass, crystal, wood.
Yeah.
Ceramic, like pretty much whatever they felt like making it out of. And then they would use that instead of the apples. And then the Yule log is still like a thing with Christmas. They didn't even change the name of that. It's still a Yule log.
Well, is that something you can like buy and do?
Yeah.
I've never even seen that before.
Christmas carols sing about the Yule log.
Yeah, I'm sure I've heard it like a billion times. I just never honed in and zoned in and like really heard about the I remember hearing like Yuletide Carol or something like that. Mm-hmm. Or something like that.
It's Yuletide. Yule time sometimes.
Yule time, okay.
Yuletide. When it comes to like Christmas and like our stories and like the things we tell our kids and Santa Claus stories and to an essence, like the whole concept of like the spirits, like the angels and stuff that are watching over you, and angels are in essence like a spirit, right?
Yeah.
So you know, it's still a time of spiritual awareness, and it's just like a really big, absorbing, really, assimilating into that type of setting.
It's just strange that like so many cultures like during this time as well, same thing with with Halloween is like there's like this like veil or like there's like this spiritual thing that a lot of people are concerned about during these times of the year, like anywhere between like the end of October to like through December, and how it's so like widespread. It's just is there something there? Like, is there something these guys are tuned into? Is it paranoia? Is it just like, is it like the time of the year because it's freezing out and everything's dying and it just seems desolate and like and lonely to some degree, is something actually thinning, you know, and like the spiritual realm or whatever is definitely more of a threat.
It wasn't directly mentioned in any of the research that I was doing at the time, but it really felt like a lot of these like practices and traditions and things that they used to do, it seems like it's in direct relation with something that we experience very commonly today. And maybe they didn't mention it directly because maybe it didn't have a word for it back then, but seasonal depression, which is a huge,
which I'm
issue.
Currently dealing with that right now. Yeah. So if you guys hear a little different tone of me, I'm like, damn, I'm just depressed. I'm just sad.
Yeah. But I mean, you see that everything's dying. Everything's desolate. There's like, 600 feet of snow on the ground, like
it's like the lack of sun too, you know, you're not getting that natural vitamin D boost or whatever, you know, you're normally supposed to get.
So this whole like lifting of the spirits practices is maybe like an attempt to like, hey, like
keep their own demons at bay, right?
people really experience an issue this time of year, like maybe we really should, you know. And a lot of times, like especially back then, they would attribute like mental disorder and things like that and depressions and anxieties and whatnot to the spirit world and spirits that they didn't like appreciate us, I guess, and like they came for us or whatever. And
yeah,
so they would do these things that would and like I said, I didn't see this directly stated in any of my research, but I kind of feel like there's like a correlation there.
Yeah, or maybe interestingly enough, maybe they're like archetypes within their own subconscious mind that are like personified as demons that are dark, and they like kind of come out during that time because they're not as easily repressible, and they have to kind of face them, and it gets projected onto their environment, and then they have this like paranoia of some external threat when it's like an interior issue. Or maybe there's just a mixture of both, or just straight spirit world's actually then. I mean, my mind is as open as the entire universe, so you know, you're just not sure. But yeah, coming back to Christmas, Constantine, we were speaking about how it became a thing in the 4th century. for Christmas to become a thing, or celebrating Jesus' birth. And Constantine, when he had made Christianity like the big religion in Rome, made Christmas kind of official in 336 AD. So Constantine had a big influence, at least in Rome, or I think he was in Rome, Constantine, yeah, mm-hmm. For Christmas. But what Christmas was initially called in the very beginning was the Feast of the Nativity. It wasn't called Christmas or anything like that. So it was just strictly about Jesus' birth, instead of all the customs that came around with it.
I think the term Christmas, if I'm remembering correctly, came after a significant event that we're going to talk about in a couple of minutes here. And it wasn't Christmas. They refer to, hey, this is Christ's Mass.
Yeah, was it the Mass of Christ or the Day of Christ? Maybe, yeah, Mass, they said, right?
I saw it called different things. Christ and Mass of Christ, yeah. And then, like, it was literally like, oh, we're going to go to Christ's Mass.
Okay.
It's like his birth, and then obviously it gets shortened up. And
it's like a feast or a celebration of Christ, I guess, essentially, or like a ceremony,
yeah,
or
they would, like, go,
dedication.
They would go to church, hear the whole story, and do the worship, and then, yeah, and then do the whole feasting and whatnot.
Yeah. Yeah, so then we bring it to the 17th century, I guess. You know, Christmas kind of like lost lost its spark to some degree. Whatever Christmas was known as throughout these times, with that celebration, kind of like lost its luster here and there. And you know, certain a lot of parts of at least America outlawed Christmas in the 17th century.
Yeah, it was the Puritans marched and took over. They overthrew the current king. I forget which king it was. They overthrew his forces and then took over.
Yeah, the Puritans were a huge influence, right? Like, they were, like, about being, like, straight pure. I think they saw all the customs that the church had assimilated from the pagan past. And, like, they saw, like, a lot of the symbologies. And they knew that it wasn't pure to the Bible. And I think they didn't want any part of that, right? I think that's pretty much
right.
Their influence, why they were so negative towards the idea.
There's a section in the Bible that says you should not have an observance of time, a celebration of time. So they don't do, like, we see that with the modern day Jehovah's Witnesses as well.
So they don't practice.
No birthdays, no holidays, none of that. None of it.
Really?
Yeah.
No birthdays, nothing?
Nothing. No celebrations of time.
I didn't know that. Interesting.
They do their worship, they do their teaching, they go about, but yeah, they don't celebrate any holidays of any kind.
It's like, dude, it's just a time, you know, we're in the middle of eternity here. It's not important. Just keep moving.
Yeah, well,
don't even celebrate. Who cares?
As far as they're concerned, because the Bible does say that you should not celebrate time.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, if you're a follower of the Bible or whatever, I mean, I guess it makes sense to not celebrate that.
Yeah, while you proceed forward with it's actually my favorite part of the whole story.
Hmm.
So I know what you're about to talk about. I'm going to find the Bible verse about the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so go ahead.
So sorry. So yeah, I was gonna say how while, you know, during the time that Christmas was canceled, people were like pissed. Like they did not like that at all. And there's like threats out, you know, if you celebrate Christmas or whatever it's called at the time, that you can get fined, and you can, there's all types of penalties that could incur because of it. But, you know, people wanted Christmas back. It never stopped being celebrated. And eventually it came back because of popular demand. So it just kind of shows you, like, how much power, you know, the people really do have, if act in unison, or how much, you know, the majority has in terms of power based off their own actions, if they don't let fear control them. But, yeah, so we got Christmas back. And Christmas... eventually, Christmas only recently kind of became a federal holiday, and that was on June 26th, 1870. So yeah, besides that, it was kind of like an incubation period, kind of just there, not there, kind of hibernating, kind of incubating the ideas, forming it into one, you know, the amalgamation of different traditions, trends, and symbols that we know it as today. And yeah, it really didn't take off. Or it didn't become what we really knew of it as today, until the 19th century. So it's only a couple hundred years old. It's like two generations old. The way that we know it today, which is interesting because I think a lot of people take this for granted. Like a lot of people see this holiday and they just, you know, expect it's just kind of been a custom that's been around for extremely like extreme long time. They don't really look into the origins of it, and you know, I'm to blame for that too. I never really knew the complete origins of Christmas before really researching and digging into this this episode right now. So
it'll kind of mess you up a little bit because it takes like all this stuff you've been told your whole life, and then you're like, oh,
you just get disillusioned.
Yeah, there's yeah, a little I mean, bit
if,
of a veil.
If you let it, yeah, that's like the same thing with so many things. Is like disillusionment. Like you're told throughout life, so it's a magical aspect of something, or like, or just how things are. Then you actually look into the reality of things or how things form. And it's like, oh, whoa. It's like completely opposite than what you think, or like it's like a completely different lineage than what you'd imagine. It kind of shakes your reality so much, you know. It just kind of shows how much of a how limited our consciousness really is, and just how wild reality could be once you unravel it. But yeah, so as it became reimagined in the 19th century, it just became more family oriented. You know, it included a lot of the past customs, but more so than not, it started becoming just more of a family tradition, more centered around home, more centered around gathering, of giving. You know, of course, how we know it all today. So yeah, it's about in terms of that. I'm not sure if there's anything you have to add in terms of that section.
No, not really. That was pretty much everything that I had. I just thought it was super interesting that the Puritans came in. They just like outlawed Christmas.
Yeah.
They were like, no, no more.
Like, nah, man, nah, we're here now. Stop the Christmas.
Yeah.
And stop the Christmas.
They took the Christmas pies and they renamed them mince pies.
Oh, so they named them that.
Yeah, they renamed, well, it wasn't the Puritans that renamed them. It was the people who still wanted to celebrate Christmas that renamed them, because as long as it didn't contain the name Christmas, it wasn't illegal. So you have the same food, you just change the name, you could still enjoy it the time of year.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, mm-hmm. So they're just trying to like warp around the meaning a little bit, the attribution. And in terms of the Christmas tree that we know of today, that started heavily started in the 16th century as well in Germany. And like CJ had said, they decorated I can't even talk right now. They decorated evergreen trees a lot during those times. But Christmas trees in America only became heavily popular. Christmas trees in general, dealing with the holiday, only became really popular in the 19th, 20th centuries. So that even using a Christmas tree as a staple for this holiday, with how we know it today is a couple of hundred years old as well. In terms of Santa Claus, as far as I understood, came from St. Nicholas, although you had brought up Santa Claus being potentially having some origins and a Norse god, right?
The female goddess Holda.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so that's another interesting idea. I don't know about that. In terms of my understanding, I thought it came potentially from St. Nicholas, but during the lineage of St. Nicholas, St. Nicholas was, I think, in Turkey. He was kind of a leader in Turkey, and he kind of like abandoned a lot of his wealth, I believe, or to some degree, whatever he had to kind of benefit and heal and the sick and children he was a saint. So yeah.
There's a lot of different tellings of like history. I've heard some people say that like the current telling of Saint Nicholas is extremely exaggerated, and all he did was he left a bag of money on two different families' windowsills to help them out through a tough winter.
Imagine that. Like the guy has such a legacy and a legend just because of that.
And then there's another legend where St. Nicholas would leave like a fish for you or some fish like on your windowsills. And then there was the ones where like he gave out toys. Then there's the legends where he was a grumpy guy. Like he wasn't particularly nice, but he cared. There was a bunch of different stories about St. Nicholas and stuff. And then like the one you said, which is like the really common days. Celebrated story.
Yeah, the Christian-y one. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm willing to bet the whole concept of Santa Claus is a mashup of St. Nicholas and the goddess Holda.
Yeah,
and
maybe,
then that whole
maybe.
Concept of Odin flying across the
yeah,
sky.
Yeah, it could
took
be.
All this different elements. And like, and then the Santa Claus as we know him today was invented by Coca-Cola. So
that's debatable, though.
Like the image.
Yeah, I don't know. That's debatable. I don't know if that's fact.
I'm pretty sure it is.
I think I've looked into it. I wasn't sure if that was a fact. I mean, it could be. I could be wrong.
I've seen the old images of Santa Claus. And
he was green.
Like, He was green. He was skinny, wearing long robes.
Yeah, no, I know. It's definitely a different image. And I know that of the theories involving Coca-Cola and how Santa Claus came to be. I don't know 100%. I didn't research that aspect a lot. But yeah, that's definitely one specific theory out there for sure. I've heard about it before.
In 1931, Coca-Cola commissioned an illustrator named Haydon Sundblom, who gave us our current image of Santa Claus.
Interesting. Okay, well, that's a fact then. Okay, well, there's definitely a lot of substance to that.
They didn't invent the Santa Claus story, but they shaped him how we know him today.
Yeah, that's interesting. In terms of St. Nicholas, even St. Nicholas has his day, the Feast of St. Nicholas, and that's December 6th. And in the past, on this specific day, kids would get gifts if they were good, and they wouldn't if they were bad. So there's a little correlation there between the Feast of St. Nicholas and, you know, the trend that we have today of the gifts. I mean, of course, also, there's a correlation between the gifts that the Magi brought Jesus upon his upon his birth, but apparently that was a huge influence to the Saint Nicholas thing.
Yeah, the whole thing with Santa Claus too, like he has his naughty and nice list, and he brings good kids gifts and bad kids coal. That's a really, really light version of what a whole lot of cultures think. sometimes he's Santa Claus's brother, sometimes he's his demonic counterpart, but we have Krampus.
Yeah, Krampus. I've heard of him before. I should know more about him, but I don't.
It's a Germanic tradition.
Okay.
And like I said, sometimes he's Santa Claus's like brother. Sometimes he's like this demon that is like a counterpart to Santa Claus.
That's what I heard. He's like an evil counterpart.
Yeah. So what happens is in this line of thought is Santa brings good kids gifts, and Krampus brings bad kids whoopings.
Jesus.
He pulls up, and he's got switches.
Yeah.
And he just whoops your kids, like, just beats the living hell out of them with these sticks.
Really?
Yeah.
He's violent.
Oh, yeah. And then...
he looks violent.
He beats the crap out of kids. And then sometimes if a kid is really, really bad, he throws them in the basket on his back, and he goes home and he eats them later.
Oh, man.
We have a whole... Last Christmas...
Tell that to your kids.
Last Christmas, we did a whole special on Krampus on Cryptotechnical.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it's wild. And then there's other stories of Krampus where instead of eating the kids, he throws them in the basket and takes them to hell.
Jesus.
He's like, into hell with you guys. Like this basket's like a portal.
I know what it's like being raised with that belief, you know, going to hell if you do bad, like from your birth, you know, and just the fear that revolves around your actions with that belief in mind. So you can only imagine, like, if kids like had this idea that this Krampus entity is a reality, you know. And
it's a really weird concept too, of telling kids like, if you're going to be bad, you're going to go to hell, because definitely in the Bible it says if you're truly repentant of your sins, God forgives all sins except for the denial of him and his son.
Yeah,
in the New Testament. Yeah. So really, like, as long like you, if you're bad as a kid or whatever, like, you know, later on in life, if you in the Bible, like, if you look back and you're just like, wow, that was really scummy of me, and I feel horrible about that, and I am genuinely sorry for those terrible things I did, you will be forgiven.
Yeah, but it also alludes to the, I think the chapter and verse, John 3:16, where it talks about essentially, like, you know, whoever believes in me shall not perish, but shall have everlasting life, in terms of Jesus. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you know, there's a lot of, A lot of contradictory or very investigative ideas that you can find in the Bible in terms of that area. But in terms of the whole going to hell and things like that, it's just kind of a digression. But for kids, man, that is one powerful and just destructive belief to have, at least in my upbringing. Like, it's just like it's like this, like,
that
just constant fear. It just gets invoked every time you do something that's gray.
Yeah, like, you're going to hell and stuff. Down south of here, down in, like, Louisiana, they got Rougarou.
South Pole?
They got Rougarous down south.
What's a Rougarou?
Rougarou is, like, this combination of, like, Sasquatch, Chupacabra, and skunk apes, and something else.
So he's, like, an amalgamation of some cryptid.
But it is a cryptid, except it's a Catholic created thing, and they straight up down south tell their kids, if you're bad and you don't go to church and stuff, Rougarou gonna come eat you.
Damn.
And like, if a Rougarou eats you, you don't go to hell, you don't go to heaven, you go to purgatory.
I feel like that's like some of that's. I feel that's like a lot of kids' first traumas
they experience. Tell little like kids this
telling
stuff.
Kids these stories, so like of control and how to keep them in line, and the methods that we're going about doing this. Mm-hmm. You know, instead of teaching kids things just plain logical morality and cause and effect and how they play out on the material plane, you know, we add these mythologies and stories to it, which make being a good person sound forced and just based out of fear, and just instead of based out of fact and understanding of why to do good. And
I don't know, man.
It's just an interesting area of it's a very interesting custom that a lot of people employ.
Yeah, I can't get behind telling kids like hey, like you're a little kid, like, and like it falls under like indoctrination, which we'll cover in a future episode. But you know, you're gonna go to hell if you're bad. Santa Claus isn't coming if you're bad. You know, you're going to hell. I do support. Listen, if you act up and you're crazy and you don't listen, and you don't do the things the child is expected to do, Santa Claus is not only not going to come bring you gifts, but this guy's going to show up and he's going to beat the life out of you. So you are going to catch a whooping. Like, I feel like that's less traumatic than telling a kid you'll burn for eternity. Like, listen, you better not act up.
It's because, definitely less traumatic.
Like, you're going to get the spanking of a lifetime. So, like, you better chill. Like,
it's definitely most likely less traumatic.
Because, I mean, as a kid, like, I got told, I can't tell you how many times as a kid that I was going to get the crap kicked out of me or something. Like,
yeah, I have differing views on that, but yeah, that's why we're all here.
Like, if memories as a kid being told, like, listen, like, if you act up, you are going to get whooped.
Mm-hmm.
You're just like, maybe I should stop doing that then.
Yeah, yeah.
You know. So, yeah, I mean, I could see, like telling a kid a story. Like, hey, Krampus is no joke. And Santa not only won't bring you any presents, but this guy might show up and give you a spanking you will never forget.
Yeah, it's definitely imaginative, a very imagination-based way to keep a child in line. You know, it's just like, it's like
well, now we have
intangible fear, you know?
I could, you know, I should have looked up when this became a tradition for Christmas time. This is recent. This is a new thing. Elf on a shelf, bro.
Elf on a shelf?
You've never heard of Elf on a Shelf?
No.
Okay.
Have you guys?
Yes. I have a child.
Elf on a shelf?
Dude.
So what is that?
I started hearing about Elf on a Shelf. Let me think. I was already out of college when I started hearing about this. This is a really new thing.
So it's at least been around for at least like a decade, right?
In that neighborhood, at least. Maybe a little longer it's been around, but this is when I started hearing about it. But it's definitely super new, and it's definitely not something that anyone but millennials started doing. Like, this was not something you would ever remember. Our parents didn't do it. None of our friends' parents did it. This was not a concept. But the thing with the Elf on the Shelf is you have this little elf doll in your house. And you're supposed to, when your kids go to bed at night, you're supposed to move it, right, to different areas of the house.
Yeah.
And what you're supposed to tell your kids is, this is one of Santa's helpers. This elf is one of Santa's helpers. And if you act up and act crazy, this elf is going back to the North Pole and telling Santa that you're acting up, you know, and no gifts. Like, you're going to get cold because this elf is going to run over here and snitch on you.
It just keeps getting worse and worse.
Yeah, so now we have this little spy in the house.
Yeah, like we got a spy now.
The kid can see it. Oh, he's not even good at hiding. Like, the kid can see him, like, that guy is going to narc on me.
It's like a security camera just, like, monitoring the kid 24-7.
Straight up, Santa's secret agent.
Man.
His man in green. Like,
it's so horrible.
I mean, it's kind of crappy to tell your kids, like, hey, I intentionally put a spy in the house to let Santa know that you're acting up.
It's just like you're psychologically playing with your kid's mind to, like, control them.
But you know, at the same time,
like, okay, man.
It's better than telling your kids that they're going to get a beating, first of all. Please don't beat your children, people.
Like, yeah, I mean, I don't think any of these things are good things to do, but I mean, I might be wrong.
And it
I
is
could be wrong. You never know.
Way better than telling your kids you're going to hell.
Yeah, that's rough.
You're gonna have
personal experience.
You're gonna have a tough morning once a year if you act up and act crazy, because that elf's gonna tell Santa he's not gonna bring you nothing. So, like, one morning out of the year, you're gonna have this, like, problem. So maybe you should be good, and the elf will give you a good report.
Yeah,
you know, it's way better than you're gonna burn for eternity, and it's way, way, way better than Krampus is about to pull up while you're in bed and just beat you with a stick.
Yeah, I thought maybe they kind of like added the whole elf on the shelf aspect on top of it all, on top of everything else. Like, I don't know if it's, I don't know if that's just like the new and improved way to control your kid. You know what I mean? I don't know if that's like the new, like modified version, 21st century version.
It is the new
scaring your kid the elf, to being good.
The elf on the shelf is the new. The new thing that people are doing.
Upon looking it up briefly, I guess it was a book, The Elf on the Shelf.
Oh, really? That's where it comes from? Is a book?
Yeah, it says The Elf on the Shelf. I mean, at least I look it up, and this is what comes up. It says The Elf on the Shelf, a Christmas tradition. It's a 2005, I guess it came out in 2005, children's picture book. Yeah, so we're going to run, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, so I'm assuming that trend or custom comes from this book.
Probably.
In 2005.
Yeah, that's where a lot of trends and customs come from, is books.
Yeah, which in that case would be about 15 years old. So, yeah, I mean, I've never even heard of this before.
Which makes sense. If it came out in 05, not too many of my friends had kids at that point. So, when just getting out of college, you know, you start pushing out pups.
Yeah.
And now the elf on the shelf is a thing. I refuse to do it.
It's wild. It's weird, man. Especially the elf I'm seeing here on the site. It's just like this weird elf just gazing at you. And the book must be decent, or at least in the mainstream mind, because the rating on Amazon, out of 11,653 ratings, which is a lot to begin with, it's like an overall 4.8 stars. So, I mean, people must like it. I don't know.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you think about all these past ways of getting your kids to behave, you threaten them with some form of violence, which I'm amused by, but it doesn't make it right. Like, I'm not going to ever tell my child that Krampus is going to come beat him. Like, I'm not going to do that.
It's like, what?
I think it's one of the funniest things I've ever heard.
You seen his face after that? It's
Could you imagine being an adult at that time period and with a straight face looking at your kid and be like, a demon's going to beat you?
It's like, huh?
And, like, the kid just being like, oh, God, and, like, walking away. Like,
dude, sucking on his pacifier, like, what?
there's a comedy in there. It's really dark, but there's a comedy in that.
It's wild.
Like, it's horrible. It's a terrible thing to do. And now it's just like, listen, he's going to tell on you. It's not a good look. So just do your chores, man. Crazy, man. Do your chores. Don't yell at your mom. Be respectful in the house.
Yeah, that's it.
Because you're going to get told on. You ain't going to get no presents. It's going to be bad. It's like, all right. I mean, it's way less traumatic, I guess. My question is, have any of these kids like kidnapped the elf on the shelf and like dispatched him?
Yeah, start messing around with the parents. Start thinking the parents are going crazy. Like,
like, I wonder, like, if you guys are parents of children and you do the elf on the shelf, and you've ever walked into your living room to like a dismembered elf on the shelf laying on your living room floor.
Yeah, like, kids, like, screw your damn
stuffing,
elf, dude.
What's
up, man?
You're, like, stuffing pulled out.
I don't need your presents.
Decapitated elf. Write to us at mystery.stone.podcast@gmail.com, and I will
send pics.
I will read that story on this show.
Yeah, for real. Yeah.
Because that's funny.
So, yeah. It's
if kids are just, like, just kidnapping the elf, like, you ain't gonna tell on nobody.
Hey, man, I'm all for anything that's reducing trauma, especially in kids, because there's a billion there's a billion ways that we've been traumatized and it's not even being addressed. So whatever causes the least amount of trauma and just negativity on the human psyche, cool. If we need an elf on the shelf right now to kind of get over the Santa Claus fear or the hell fear, I mean, cool. I mean, whatever's a step in the right direction.
I mean, it's kind of cool too if you think about it. It goes back and it's almost like going back to your pagan roots. You know, you have this magical spiritual being who's spying on you instead of a deity that's just going to cast you into a lake of fire or a demon that's going to beat you. So, like, you have this, like, and it's less religious. Maybe that's why it's more appealing. Maybe that's why it's appealed to our generation as much because, like, you know, the millennials, like, as a whole, we've had a lot of religious fallout.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's either, like, more spiritual or creative. More fun, not as formal or rigid.
Right.
I think there's like a little bit of like a liberation or like an inherent human feeling to be more free and less confined from all the stencils of the past. So maybe this is just kind of the way to remove the stencil and have be a little bit more free with the concept of morality.
Yeah, and instead of like a god, a monotheistic situation, we have this. I mean, in a way, it's like almost like an esoteric type thing. in some aspects. So it's kind of cool. It's like poking its head back up and being like, hey, I'm still here.
So yeah, I'm still here. I'm here to stay. But we're gonna morph this a little bit.
We're gonna make your kid believe in this little spirit. This little snitch spirit.
Yeah, it's almost as if Christmas itself is maturing a little bit in that aspect.
That's kind
of
cool.
It's like less less in its infantile stages of crazy fear and all this stuff and extreme modes of inducing that fear, and now we're moving into like a more mature, like, okay, you know, just gotta do good, man. I mean, we're gonna have a little reminder there for you, but
we've moved past the whole you're burdened and ill, and we've also moved past the spare the rod, spoil the child mentality.
Yeah.
You know.
So I mean, that's cool. That's good. Whatever's good, you know, whatever's better.
Whatever advances for the better.
Yeah, whatever advances for the better, even though I might not seem the best. In terms of coming back real quick to a few things I have left, for Santa Claus at least, that Santa Claus, as far as I knew, was conceptualized as we know him today, not necessarily wearing the red, but just kind of like his overall figure and his form. I guess it came from a poem written in 1822 called An Account of a Visit from St. Nicholas. And that's the poem that starts off like, well, 'twas the night before Christmas, blah, 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 blah. And that was written in 1837. I guess I kind of wrote that wrong there. But nonetheless, it was written in the 1800s by Clement Clark Moore, who is the author of this poem. And I guess it depicted kind of like the overall setting and scenery of Christmas Eve, or just Christmas in general. Christmas Eve. And how, I guess the usual depiction that we know Santa Claus came from this this poem in terms of mentally. And then their cartoonist named Thomas Nast materialized the Santa Claus in its visual, mode of seeing him in 1881, when he drew Santa Claus from the depiction in that poem. That's where I found modern Santa Claus and its at least form to have come from, which of course is between 19th and 20th centuries, as we see. So yeah, it just kind of shows that like this really did start the mold drastically in the last couple hundred years, and just how new that this new version of Christmas really is. And the final thing I have in terms of, you know, let's talk about Rudolph for a second, because Rudolph is my man. You know what I mean?
Who doesn't love Rudolph?
Rudolph's my boy. You know, and just because of the fact that he's like the odd one out, you know, and he ends up being like the, you know, the head dude, you know, he's got the cool red nose, it glows, you know what I mean? He's just a unique one. He's the weird one, or however you want to view him. And I didn't even know this until this morning when I was wrapping up, looking at the certain symbolic aspects of Christmas. But Rudolph was actually part of a marketing plan that was going on in 1939. To kind of, you know, just make Christmas more easier for the market, or just to get people to get in the mood or buy more things, of course, you know, because there's always some type of corporate thing behind anything that's good.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, so yeah.
Especially in America, American spending around the holiday time, it's insane.
I think we spend like, I forget what the rate is, like 2/3 of all the money we spend is during the holidays something like that.
Billions of dollars. At Christmas time,
so wild. Like me, I don't get hardly any gifts at all. Like if any, like I'm one of these people. Like I'm not really a gift guy.
No,
I mean, me personally, no judgments or whatever.
I'm with you on that because I always feel like if I receive a gift, I'm like, I feel obligated to give one.
Yeah, and it's turns into this stressful deal.
So like, yeah, like and like. It sounds kind of selfish, but I don't really know people like that. You know, I don't really know what you're looking for. And like, I don't want to mess around, get you something and have you not like it.
Yeah. Or there's that, or then like you're worried about what they're going to get you, and they're worried about if it's going to be like equal and this and that, like all this stuff gets in. I mean, for me, I'm an anxiety type ridden type of mind. So like, I mean, I'm sure this works better for a lot of people who don't think the way I do, or doesn't overthink everything. But for me, Christmases have always been very stressful and just inconvenient and just unnecessary aspect to a lot of holidays. It's one thing if you get gifts for somebody throughout the year or whatever, like little things, you know, that you know they want it, or if it says a loved one or something, like, you know, something that's been on their mind, or something small, and you know, just throughout the year to randomly surprise people. But when it comes to like a formal holiday where everyone across the globe does these certain customs and you feel obligated to do it, I mean, to me, it's not my mode of action. And if it's yours, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just for me, it's just more stressful. For me, I like to move from presence, like physical gifts of presence, to presence of like just being around the presence of people that that you love. Like I'd rather have be in someone's presence than get a present from them.
Oh, 100%. A good way to celebrate Christmas, like in my mind, like let's hang out, let's eat dinner, let's do something that out of the like if it's like a special meal.
Yeah.
You know, we'll really go we'll go over the top on how we prepare it, and then we'll sit down and watch Die Hard together.
Yeah, and if you have, and if I have kids, I'll give my kids gifts for sure. Like, yeah, I'll feed into the market a little bit for that. I mean,
100% give my kid gifts every year.
It's like, yeah, I mean, it's like either you have them like just exempt because this is a custom now, and you kind of feel like you have to, and you know, it's nice to give to your kids and
give them something to look forward to.
Yeah, I don't think I'll tell them Santa Claus is real. Maybe I would. I don't know. When the time comes, if I ever have a kid. But and there's nothing right or wrong with doing either or. But yeah, it's just I don't know. I think people get too wrapped up in the gifts, no pun intended, and kind of forget about a lot of the important aspects about, you know, what Christmas could provide.
We're gonna tell the little man about Santa. Because
are you? Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean,
there's nothing wrong with that.
I don't like Christmas myself.
Yeah.
Like I can't stand the holiday. But one of my fond things I do is it, like when I look back, it is the magic of Santa.
Mm. You know. Yeah. Yeah, that was huge.
You know, like that. I love those memories. Like just thinking about Santa and like just the magic behind it, and like it's this evening, and like I love my memories of believing in Santa.
Yeah, they're the best. You know?
Yeah. So if oh, you're lying to your kids, cares. They'll get over it.
Yeah, I mean, you will get over it. I mean, I got over it. I never really,
like, when I found out Santa wasn't real, I didn't hold that against my parents, I don't think. Like, I found out the same. My dad screwed up a tooth fairy thing.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, and the tooth fairy didn't come at night. The tooth fairy came at, like, 2 o'clock in the middle of the day while I was downstairs having food.
Oh, shit.
And I was like, my dad was in my room for, like, half an hour. Oh, and I'm like, oh man, does that mean the Easter Bunny and
it's like, wait,
Santa? Damn it!
Like there comes that day of disillusionment when you're a kid. You start realizing everything's a joke, everything's a lie, everything that you thought was magical isn't.
I think I might have been a little. I think I might have been a little mad for a little bit, but like I don't hold that. Like I'm great at all the crappy stuff that happened around Christmas time for me. Like my parents, like their final separation was New Year's Eve, just after Christmas.
Man.
Over a game of Monopoly with us, like
really?
Yeah, my dad got drunk. He was an idiot. We were trying to play Monopoly, and he like threw the board and stuff. Like it was awful.
Damn, man.
You know, like all these like crappy things I have about Christmas, like, but the magic of Santa was awesome, and I don't want to deprive my son of that. Like, how come you never told me about Santa? Like, that's a question I'm going to answer later. You never told me about Santa. You didn't let me have Santa.
Yeah,
let me have Santa. I mean, I don't support the idea of taking your kid to sit on a grown man's lap at the mall. That's
yeah,
weird.
That's getting into a whole other aspect of this. It's definitely a strange one.
Yeah, I'm not doing.
When you really think about it,
go get a picture with Santa. No, I don't know that guy, and I'm not giving him my kid.
Yeah, like why is this old dude sitting in a Santa Claus outfit, like having all these kids sit on his lap? Like what's the motive there?
Money.
I'm just curious about
they
the
get
motive.
Paid.
Do they get
mall
paid a lot
Santas
of money?
Get paid?
Do they?
They get a fat stack of cash for doing that. Every year, if you're a good Santa, you can make almost 6 figures. They get
Santa, dude.
Yes, dude.
I know what I want to be when I grow up, bro.
Hey, yo, when you get a chance,
Santa Claus.
Google average salary of a Santa and stuff. Yeah,
just for that little time of the year.
If they're good at it, yes. If they are good at it, they get very high digit contracts.
Man.
Like in 8 weeks,
I need to start eating more, man. Start growing a beard.
in the 8 weeks that they do their photographs and stuff at malls and whatnot, they make what we would make as like a comfortable living for an entire year.
Man.
Yeah,
all right. Well,
paid.
I know what I'm doing next year. So,
well, you're gonna have to get old really fast.
Just put some makeup on, draw some wrinkles on. You know,
I mean,
do something.
2020 is aging us all. So,
yeah, no, especially with 5G coming.
Ugh, but.
So
when it comes to this whole thing, I would definitely tell them about Santa Claus, give them a little bit of magic, a little bit of hope.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I mean, everyone has their mode of doing it. I don't think it's right or wrong either way. It's just you could just hope to do whatever you do has the best, you know, effect on somebody, you know, and that's about it. But to wrap up what I was saying about Rudolph as my final thing, he, 1939, his conception was essentially this one guy, Robert L. May, created the poem for these Christmas books that they were handing out at the time. And so when he created the poem, he also created Rudolph. And so, yeah, so Rudolph was just created. How many years ago is that? 2060. It's like, yeah, Rudolph was created 80 years ago, essentially.
Yeah, give or take just a couple like of years how, in that neighborhood.
And like, this is something that's like baffling me. Like I always kind of thought that Rudolph, like, I mean, I really thought to look into it so deep, you know what I mean? But like, I was kind of, you just kind of take for granted, like, this is just how it is, you know, and it's how it's been for a long time. And these are the symbols that are used and, you know, and, you just kind of take it for granted, a lot of things, of course. And,
there's a super realistic moral to Rudolph too.
In terms of,
general people. Like how people view other people.
Yeah, is it, are you talking about like maybe like a like the odd one out or like the bullying aspect or like just the
No, people only like you as long as you're useful.
Oh, okay.
I'm a little cynical at Christmas time.
Oh, I gotcha. I gotcha. I mean, it's definitely a it's not necessarily wrong in all areas, you know. But yeah, and I guess like Robert May also created Rudolph based off his own childhood experiences of being bullied. So I'm thinking like, damn, you know, like this guy had no clue that when he was a kid that him being bullied and the experiences that he had was going to go into making something so revolutionary and monumental as the figure of Rudolph.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, you know, it's like, wow, you know, something that someone perceives as being so negative and terrible can at the end of his life be something that's contributed to one of the best things that they've ever done.
It was a really good Christmas special for Rudolph too, with like the prospector or the mountaineer, whatever he is, and he always has the ice pick, and every time it hits the snow he's like licking it looking for gold. And
yeah, dude, yo, there's some
the
crazy
Yeti, and
there's some crazy, like those are some of my favorite movies, like those claymation, they're really weird. There was like Cornelius, I think it was like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. There's like Cornelius, that guy.
Yeah, that's who I was talking about. He's always licking the pickaxe.
Yeah, my man Cornelius with the hat on.
Those specials are fantastic.
They're so good, but they're so weird. Like, yeah. I swear, like when I was a kid, those movies traumatized me. Like, they're so trippy and weird and hard to grasp and understand. I mean, I own them all on DVD now, and every single year I'll watch all of the other reindeer.
Was it Jack Frost was the one with Heat Miser and Cold Miser?
I'm not sure about that one. I just remember a couple of them.
You don't. Oh man, like this is like one of the most iconic like songs from a movie around Christmas.
Yeah, I'm not sure offhand.
I'm Mr. Heat Miser.
I don't remember that.
I'm Mr. Sun.
I don't remember that.
Come on.
I don't remember that.
That's like the best one.
Is it from that movie?
Yeah.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, I'll play a YouTube video for you when we're done.
Okay.
Here.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's been a while since I've seen it, and but it's yeah. So like those movies are some of my favorite. Like there's like a something about Toy Town or toys, like the rejected toys or something like that. I forget another part of the movie. But one Christmas movie I just mentioned it briefly that I watch every single year with my brother. It's like a little custom is watching this cartoon. Called Olive the Other Reindeer. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. I think it aired.
Vaguely.
It's a cartoon that like it's about like Olive. Olive is the name of this dog, and the cartoon. And it's not really a cartoon. It's kind of like, I don't know, like a, it looks kind of South Park-ish in terms of how like they portray the characters. It's just really funny. Like the funny is like the characters look really funny, and there's a lot of adult like. It's for all ages. It's really there's a lot of, like adult entertainment. There's a lot of like, you know, kid stuff. But overall, like the if anyone hasn't seen it yet and they're looking for like a little Christmas something a little fun to watch, it's definitely amazing. It's fun. I think it first aired on Nickelodeon like a long time ago. It's a special when I was a little kid, and ever since then I stuck to it. But that, and they had like these older Christmas cartoons. I have to figure out who created them, but just some really trippy, weird like. Just Christmas cartoons and shows they had back then that I swear it just really left like a really weird indelible mark on my psyche when I was a kid. You like I I liked them, but like I didn't realize this like weird feeling watching them because they're so weird. Like just the way they sound, the way they look, the way the animation is, the way the music sounds, like.
And they in like a lot of these Christmas I guess some people I've heard people call them Christmas carols. I call them Christmas specials, but a lot of these they even go back to like the old Norse traditions and everything. Like they have a lot of that stuff in there, and like the whole concept of heat miser and snow miser, cold miser, whatever. Like that's a sun god, and you know.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm surprised I never heard of that before.
Yeah, that's a big one.
I'm sure I have, but like off the top of my head, yeah, it's just it just eludes
Frosty
me.
Frosty the Snowman is full of esoteric occult type practices where you build the snowman. These kids accidentally do a ritual and they put a head on, it brings them to life.
Of course
they make like a golem out of snow.
There's always something like that involved with everything. As it appears,
like so, like even to this day, we haven't let go of our pagan roots when it comes to this stuff.
Yeah, maybe it's interesting. Like maybe even subconsciously on some level, we don't want to, or like this just kind of like lodged in our psyche because it's kind of what brings us home to like our true nature. Because like I guess maybe the pagans and everyone back then was more nature based and was more close to our earthly nature, you know, to some degree. So maybe like even subconsciously we still want to stay attached to those roots, you know, no matter how blasphemous certain, you know, organizations might view those roots or how, and I'm just unnecessary or insubstantial that they are. I don't know. Maybe it's just something that we need, something that we all want, but we're kind of projecting just negativity onto it based off our own biases. But I don't know. It's a whole other idea.
I like the idea of celebrating it the old ways. You decorate the house, it looks pretty. I'm allergic to pine, but evergreens smell great. You know, then you feast and you drink and you have a good time and you honor the spirits. Hey.
And that's it.
That sounds awesome.
That sounds great.
Rather than spending a small fortune on stuff you don't need.
I know. Well, that's pretty much what I have in terms of the origins of Christmas.
And, the origins little, and all the way up to modern day.
Modern day Christmas, yeah.
We'll have to change the title of the episode, maybe. I don't know. The origins of Christmas to modern times or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess you guys already know what we titled it, so.
Yeah, you read it. You read it. We don't know what we're calling it.
Unless you guys skipped ahead, you know.
Yeah.
In that case, appreciate it.
The end of the episode first?
Like, yeah. But yeah, Christmas, great time. It's going to be released, I guess, a couple weeks. Before Christmas, so you know, this is kind of relative, but nonetheless, it's definitely great. It's definitely a weird time of the year too to experience Christmas. It's unprecedented in terms of how I'm experiencing it right now. You know, like last year, things were shut down, but you know, I don't think things really started to shut down terribly until like January or so. I don't know if I remember.
Oh man, it was
January,
like it was
February,
almost March.
Yeah, we had Christmas last year.
We were just hearing about the virus.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so this is the first year that's kind of like plagued by this, like no pun intended. But it's weird, man. There's a lot of things I wanted to do for Christmas, or just like things to go experience, or like places to go, you know. And
you can still cruise and look at Christmas lights.
You can. It's just like, you know, in terms of going to like, you know, Christmas City or all these big places now. I don't know how the lockdown that just, yeah. If for you guys who don't know, we live in Pennsylvania, United States, and we just got shut down, like a little lockdown like last year. Now, so I'm not sure what's open and what's not, but it's like the first time experiencing Christmas in this mode, like where it's just like, I don't know, it's kind of hindered, it's blocked, and even like family events are limited to how many people are supposed to be there. Not like people are going to follow that to the extent that we're being told, but I don't know, it's just I'm trying to make the best of it, you know, as I can, and hopefully all this corona stuff will be kind of settled for next year, and we'll have brighter years ahead. And but beside all that, I'm going to make the best of this, and hopefully you all enjoy the podcast, and that you guys have a wonderful Christmas as well, and that you guys, you know, that it ends up being prosperous, or it ends up, you guys end up being able to enjoy it the way you'd like to, despite all these setbacks. And, you know, you definitely, if you put your mind to it, you can. So at the end of the day, I really appreciate you guys listening. If you guys want to send me a message, send us a message, we have my Instagram. Man, I'm like getting tired. I'm starting to freaking burn out right now, guys.
It's mystery.stone.podcast. Yeah, and it's the same thing for the Gmail. Mike has his private Instagram.
My private Instagram. If you guys have any questions for me or just to view my work in general, the.omniscient.void. Once again, the.omniscient.void, so I can say it right.
Yeah. And then if you guys want to interact with us in a more live setting, there's the Cast Junkie Discord server. I myself am in there quite a bit, so you can pop in and be like, hey, I want to talk to the Mystery Stone guys about some cool concepts, and, you know, we'll chat, we'll have a good time.
Make a blam.
I will call Mike on the phone and get his insight on questions I don't know how to answer, which is going to be most of them. So
it's like I'm some elevated being, like, nah, dude.
All hail. Mikhail.
Yeah, all right.
But yeah, you know, reach out to us and talk. And if you have suggestions or if we haven't covered a topic you'd really like us to cover yet, let us know. And we'd be happy to do that. In the future, we do have some episodes planned out, but we definitely are open to suggestion, things you want to hear about. And we'll do the research and we'll come back and bring you some facts. And yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, and with that stated, Merry Christmas to all, and to all a fantastic, wonderful, and peaceful night.
Blessed be.
Take care, guys.